Yesterday, our session, the governing board of the church and all the committee chairs, a group of committee chairs and the coordinators of our programs in the life of this church and members of staff met for our fall retreat, leadership retreat over at Lafayette Orinda Presbyterian Church. And the main topic of conversation for the morning's program was the budget shortfall, a conversation that I think a lot of church boards are having this unique year in the life of the world. And so we were talking about that and some of the proposals that we are coming up with to address the shortfall, cuts in expenses, office supplies, and things like that, some minor cuts in program, some more substantial adjustments in staff hours and compensations, fundraising events and projects that are in the works. But before going into that conversation, we spent some time reflecting together on the mission of the church, who we are and why we are here, what the money and the copy machine and the staff members are here to support. We took the mission statement that's on the front of our bulletin every Sunday and reflected on it together. We had someone read it aloud three times, and each of us took time in silence to listen to it being read and to look for a word or phrase within it that resonated within us for some reason. And then once we had listened to it and reflected on it a little bit in silence, then we talked about it together, about what it was that spoke to us and why. And so people shared what the phrase or the word was that was meaningful to them. Someone said it was the phrase, the whole world, that's in there. And that idea of God loving the whole world and not just a part of it or not just a certain people or not just a certain group said something about the inclusivity of the welcome of this congregation, and that was meaningful as a part of our mission and purpose in life. Someone else reflected on the phrase, work and pray. We work and pray for peace, justice, and reconciliation, and said that work and prayer, that's the heart of our mission, is working and praying together. A few other people mentioned the words open-hearted, that said something about the meaning of this congregation to them, that this was a place you could come and be loved and love in return with an open heart. But one phrase that several people talked about was the phrase about being joyfully imperfect people. One person said that phrase acknowledges the reality that we are broken people, that we are incomplete, but that we are made whole in community, in God's community. Our brokenness, getting together with other broken people, other imperfect, incomplete people, somehow heals that brokenness and brings us all to a sense of wholeness and completion. Another person, in reflecting on that idea of joyfully imperfect people, said it's joyful because we realize we don't have to get things right all on our own. We don't have to get it all right. We don't have to single-handedly usher in the kingdom of heaven, but that we are in a community and in relationship and partnership with God as we seek to get it right. We're joyfully imperfect, not because we don't want to strive for perfection, not that our imperfection gets us off of the hook in any particular way, but because we know that within this community we find our perfection in God, that we are made whole in God, that we get it right when we partner with God in God's work of peace, justice, and reconciliation. And that conversation went on for a while and was very invigorating and clarifying, and the reflections then helped to guide the rest of our conversation through the rest of the day as we talked about the budget and some of the specifics of things that we have to deal with, that we were able to keep the conversation in perspective, had that statement reminding us of our priorities even as we talked about specifics. So this psalm, the 90th psalm, carries a similar message and serves a similar purpose. It is a psalm about the timelessness of God, Before the mountains were brought forth, before you had created the earth, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. And in the face of that eternal creative power, we realize that human beings are transitory and finite creatures, that we are like grass, that we are like a dream, that we're here for a moment and then gone, and that human life tends to be toil and struggle, and then we are swept away, we fly away. It's easy to read this psalm as a despairing psalm. Why bother? If we're just a blade of grass, shouldn't we just eat, drink, and be merry? But, you know, when I read this psalm, one of the many things I love about it, not just the beauty of the language, not just the power of the imagery, one of the things I love about it is the fact that this psalm was written 2,500 years ago. That the person who wrote these words in the original Hebrew died more than two millennia ago, and that he was as mortal as any other person. And yet here we are reading these words still, again, learning from them, being inspired by them, because even though we are mortal and finite creatures, God is timeless. The psalmist prays, prosper the work of our hands. Oh, prosper the work of our hands. Asking God, in one of the older translations, it says, establish thou the work of our hands. Build the things that we do into the foundation of this story so that they too can be built upon. That the psalmist's words all those thousands of years ago are part of the foundation of our faith now and part of the continuity of God's story in which we get to participate as we step into the flowing river of God's history. We join in that flow of God for our allotted time, building on what has come before us, and then we step aside and let others carry God's story forward. We build on what God established before us, even the work and the words of other mortal people, as we tell our chapter in God's great story. I was talking with Chandler, my husband, about this the other day, and he said, remember when we went on a baseball tour with our kids when they were little? They're grown-ups now. But many summers ago, we took them and we drove around the country to see some of the old classic ballparks, some of which are now gone. So it was a good thing that we went when we did. But the first stop on the baseball part of the trip was in Iowa, where we visited some friends, and we went out to Dyerville, where they filmed Field of Dreams, the Kevin Costner baseball movie. And there it was, the baseball field and the corn and the farmhouse, and there's a little gravel parking lot, and you can go. And leaning up against the backstop were a couple of bats, and piled up in a pile right by home plate were a couple of gloves and some balls, and you can just come and pick it up and play. So here we were, Chandler's sort of shagging some flies out there, and the kids are out running around catching them, and our friends and fielding them and taking turns playing on that field, and we played for a while and had some fun, and then went and leaned the bats up against the backstop and stacked the gloves in a stack and dropped a couple of baseballs and went back to the car as the next people were coming in to pick up the game and to carry it forward. And he said, that's what you're talking about, that we participate in this great continuity in our own way, picking up on what's gone before and then leaving it for those who will come after. And I thought, you know, there's that great speech in Field of Dreams where Terrence Mann, the sort of J.D. Salinger character, is talking about his love for baseball and this baseball field that Kevin Costner has built, Ray Kinsella, in this crazy vision. And Terrence Mann says, the one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It has been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that was once good, and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come. And then when I read this psalm, I get that same sense. It's more than that, obviously, as much as I love baseball. This psalm is is about an even deeper search for meaning, search for the meaning of life and a search for integrity and wisdom, even within the limitations of our own mortality. The reminders of mortality that are in this psalm, someone in the Bible study the other day was saying, in this Old Testament version, there really is a sense of that there is pain in life, and that we don't just gloss over that when we talk about life and the timelessness of God, that we do have to face mortality and finitude. And those reminders aren't always really welcome, and that's part of the difficulty of this psalm. And when I'm facing my own, the reality of aging more and more in my own life and try to keep a sense of humor about it as much as possible. I was at a concert last night, Steely Dan is in town, and these two guys have been in a band together for 40 years. So in the late 60s, 70s, just recorded this great music that was really a part of my young adulthood and my own musical education. And so I saw they were in town. I went to this concert, and all these middle-aged people were flowing in the Masonic Center, gray hair, a little paunchy, you know, or hair that probably was supposed to be gray but wasn't, and still a lot of blue jeans and boots, but the jeans didn't probably fit the way that they had when we first heard Steely Dan play. But it was this wonderful celebratory crowd and singing along with some of the big favorites. And one of the songs that they did was this one called Hey 19, which is a song that an older man, probably the age of many of the men in that hall last night, sings to his new 19-year-old girlfriend and says, we have nothing in common and we have nothing to talk about. She doesn't know who Aretha Franklin is, and, you know, and just you know, we can't even dance together. We don't dance the same way. And there's this one line, and every now and then people would sing along. This one line where it says, she thinks I'm crazy, and then everyone joins in and says, but I'm just growing old. And there's this sort of big applause like, oh yeah, we're kind of at the other end of that Hey 19 spectrum now. So that, you know, this kind of looming mortality, and the band members themselves weren't all that young anymore either, but the celebration of that fact, here we are, but we can still get together and listen to some good rock and roll. And then sometimes those reminders of mortality are more painful. My sister-in-law, Amy, she's married to Chandler's brother, Jerry, and Amy lives in Washington, D.C., where she runs an NGO that works on reproductive rights for women all over the world. It's an amazing organization. She's the CEO, or the executive director. And then Jerry lives in Tokyo, where he is the CEO of a group that works on climate change issues. And so they've sort of been our role model, Chandler's and mine, for long-distance marriage, because Chandler and I are only 3 time zones apart, and they are 12 time zones apart. But I talked with Amy when we were first thinking about this long-distance thing, and she and Jerry have been an important part of things for us. Amy and Jerry were in town, just coincidentally, both in the Bay Area at the same moment, right at the end of August, and we had dinner together and talked about our work and our lives and our families, and it was a great time, wonderful to see her. Then they both went back to New York, where they were looking for an apartment for Jerry because he's actually moving to the same time zone as Washington, D.C. And then a couple days later, she felt sick. She went into the hospital, ended up with a cancer diagnosis, extremely serious. Surgery 2 days later, ended up in the ICU and has been in the ICU on a respirator for the last 6 weeks. And you know, really struggling for her life. And all of us have had to look at her and realize the fragility of our existence and the unpredictability of our existence. But also, we can't even go in to visit her because of the whole vulnerability to infection. So we stay in touch by email, and there are these daily emails on a website where people can go and see what the updates are. on her condition, and thousands of people have logged on to her site and have left messages of support and prayers and encouragement. And I thought, she has done more in her life and in her work than 100 other people, just in terms of the number of women's lives that she has saved, the quality of life of the poorest of the poor that she has improved through her work, the hope that she's given to generations of daughters all over the world. And she always does her work with a sense of urgency. Not stressed and not frantic, but just really focused. And I was thinking of her as I was reading this psalm, and the one passage in the psalm that says, "So teach us to number our days. Teach us to count our days, or remind us of how precious our days are," various translations, "so that we may apply our hearts to wisdom." You never know how many days you have to learn wisdom and to do the work that God calls us to do, and how many days we have to love the people around us. And this psalm, even with its sense of the finitude of life and the reality of our own mortality, says, and in the midst of that, we get to be wise. We get to have integrity. We get to do this work that is meaningful and that leaves a legacy for those who come after us. There's the saying that your life is God's gift to you, and what you do with your life is your gift to God. And the same thing I would say about the church community. This church is God's gift to us, and what we do as a church is our gift to God. I love that we're baptizing babies this morning and then gathering for a funeral service this afternoon. Both are times of celebration and hope. Both reflect the truth of our moment in the continuity of God. And it also reminds us, these two events remind us of the continuity of the generations, of the way that we are connected to the past, to those who have gone before, to those who have brought the story to us in order that we can write our chapter. And then connects this moment with the future as we baptize babies and send them out onto God's path. In our discussion of this psalm in the Bible study on Wednesday afternoon, one person talked about how it reminded her of marching in a peace march in San Francisco with her daughter. And that there they were with these tens of thousands of people, and that they looked back up the street and there were people as far as the eye could see. And as they looked ahead, there were more, thousands and thousands of people as far as the eye could see, moving on ahead and leading the way. And that's our mission. That's what this psalm reminds us of, to carry forward the voices and the traditions of the past that have brought meaning to our own lives, and to join into that continuum for the days that we are given, and to number them attentively, and then to step aside and to leave our legacy for those who come after us, carrying forward the great story of God, even from everlasting to everlasting. Amen.